You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to an episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. I am Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
Hey, man. You seem in good spirits. Better than I expected.
Thank you, Nicholas. It is Friday. The sun is not out, either outside or in my heart, because the South Sydney Rabbitohs are absolutely awful.
Yeah, look, they went down to Brisbane 28-18. I cannot believe this game was only a 10-point margin, considering how bad Souths were. You have a lot of feelings about this game, so I'm just going to get out the paint and let you throw your elbows around a bit.
I want to preface everything I'm about to say by acknowledging that there are obviously clubs that are worse off than Souths. There are clubs that have had much more torturous existences in recent history. There are clubs that have played in a lot less big games than Souths, have had a lot less good times. Having said all of that, this is about as low as I felt about them ever, because at the very least, when they were bad in the early 2000s, it just made sense. They didn't have many good players. They weren't run like a professional rugby league team, and winning was a bonus. Like, anytime they won a game was just a pure bonus. And then the era of professionalism came in with Russell Crowe and Peter Holmescourt and Richo, yada, yada, yada. They have a couple of good years. They put some things together. They win the comp. And then when you win a comp in 2014, you can kind of tolerate a couple of lean years in 15, 16, 17, where things went backwards a little bit. And then they had this resurgence with Anthony Seibold and then Wayne Bennett and then Jason Demetriou with five straight years, either making a prelim final or a grand final. Unfortunately, not winning any of them. And to go from that, and to go from not just that, but also the first half of last year where they were playing as good as I can ever remember Souths playing, to this is just remarkable. And this blew my mind. So I walked out of Homebush Stadium on May 13th, 2023, so more than 10 months ago now. I walked out of the stadium that day with Souths going top of the ladder. I have not been in person at a Souths win since that day. It has been 10 months since I've seen Souths win a game in person. They've only won four of them, and they just happen to be on the Gold Coast, in Bathurst, in Cairns, and in New Zealand. So that's why I wasn't at any.
I think that the stat that was floating around last night was that they've won three of their last 15.
Yeah, that was wrong. It's actually four. I've got them in front of me right now. But, I mean, you're splitting hairs, really. It's still awful. And I can't pinpoint any one issue, but I do think that last night was so bad that we are finally going to see Demetriou ring some changes. You noted watching his press conference, which I didn't get a chance to see because I was elsewhere last night and was kind of only not really watching it that intently because I had some other stuff on, but you watched the press conference and highlighted that basically all the things that he highlighted when he was going through the mistakes were all things that Lachlan Ilias did wrong. And that's a point of frustration for Souths fans for a long time now has been that seven jersey. And I think we are going to finally get a change in that regard this week. So I missed that. So what exactly did he say? And so what did you glean from it?
He was talking about, he was very scathing of South Sydney's performance. Said it was a bit of a horror show, all that sort of thing. Someone asked about Jack Whiten coming back and whether that was going to fix things. And Demetriou pretty much said, well, Jack isn't going to have an opportunity to fix anything if we keep making bad errors all the time. And the errors he mentioned kicking into your own player, which Ilias did. He mentioned dropping the ball in good attacking position, which Ilias has done the past 2 weeks, like stone cold drops as well. And coaches in press conferences after losses, you do have to take it with a grain of salt sometimes because often they're quite emotional or they sort of close themselves down so much that they don't really remember what they say. I was out at Penrith on Monday afternoon for Ivan Cleary's presser, for example, and someone asked him about something he said in the presser after Penrith's loss on Friday. And he said, he goes, I have no idea if I said that or not. Like, you know what I mean? So you have to take it with a grain of salt, but I don't think it's a coincidence that the errors he mentioned were the Lachlan Ilias errors. And like, I know we're only two games into the season, but it really does feel like that is at something of a breaking point, you know? And it's, and we've said it a lot now. If he is going to make these errors, if he is still going to find his way, and if you're truly committed to him being your long-term guy, then let him work on it in reserve grade. Like, ease the pressure on him. Like, that initial week where he gets dropped, that'll be tough, and you'll have to answer a lot of questions about it. But after that, he's out of the spotlight and he can go work on what he's doing. And that's pretty clearly something I think he needs, because, you know, like, we don't like to come on here and bury blokes. We don't like to come on here and bag him or anything like that. But he's not a rookie anymore. This is the start of year three. This is the start of his fourth season as part of the NRL squad. He was like part of the squad in 2021.
Maybe he's debuting in that last round of 2021, yeah.
And there's just not been much progression. And to that, I can't identify what Lachlan Ilias' strengths are right now.
No.
I can't think of a thing that he does really, really well that you can say, well, his kicking was bad and he made these errors, but he did this really well.
Good
and
defender.
That's something you can hang your hat on. So I think he's got to rediscover something else in his game. Mm. And I think at this point, dropping him would be something of a mercy.
Yep.
Because
that's exactly what I was going to use.
Yeah, he is, rightly or wrongly, he's the poster boy of South Sydney's struggles over the last almost year now, you know? And you drop him, it doesn't have to be forever, but a temporary reprieve for the player from the spotlight, I think would do team and player quite a lot of good.
I can't believe it's never happened at any point, that his jersey has never been under any credible threat at any stage in his first grade career, apart from that week where he got hooked in that Dragons game. And even then, he was just playing again the next week. So it wasn't exactly a long-term decision either. And when you've got the guy, and maybe Dean Hawkins isn't the guy. Maybe Dean Hawkins is worse. We don't know. But you got to try. This guy's the New South Wales Cup player of the year last year. He had 700 try assists. You got to try something. He might well be just another replacement level guy. He may not be any better than Lachlan Ilias, but what do you lose by trying at this point? You have to do something, because you can't just keep trotting out with this same team, doing the same tired stuff every single week. And the thing is, mate, his role in this team should be so simple. And it's why I actually thought Luke Brooks would have been a great signing for Souths and just didn't happen for us, unfortunately. But his role in this team is very simple. It's to just facilitate things, don't make errors, and let the stars do the star power stuff, and you just keep the machine ticking along. And I think back to that Parramatta game halfway through last year, where they basically lost the game in 5 minutes because he kicked it out in the full in back-to-back sets, and Parramatta scored two tries immediately off it. I think Sash up 16-12 at that point, and then suddenly they were losing 22-16 or something. I was like, oh shit, we're going to lose. And that was it. And it was because of really easy, really avoidable mistakes. And I'm not saying this to just point the finger at him and suggest that he's the only person that's doing anything wrong at South. There's a lot of guys who had tough nights last night. He's far from alone in that regard. But that does seem to be, if you are going to ring the changes, the most obvious one to make and the easiest one to make, not just to the fans, but to the team itself as well. I think that if you, they'd never admit it publicly, of course, and I wouldn't expect them to, but I can't imagine that dropping Lockie for Footy Dean next week would get the playing group riled up. I can't imagine that they would be up in arms about that, because at this point you can see the frustration boiling over in this team and just the execution. The simple things just aren't there. This is another game where they completed like 60% of their sets, but they're just so sloppy and so lethargic. And I don't understand what's going on. And again, dropping Lachlan Ilias is not going to be a magic wand that fixes everything, but it's an easy sell to the fans and to the playing group. And I think it has to be done next week, because they're going to play the Roosters and I'm already dreading it. I'm going to have to be there watching them probably lose and start the season 0-3. And it's just a complete disaster when you think back to the end of last season and how poor they were in the second half of the year and how apparently they haven't learned any lessons from any of the stuff that went wrong at the back end of last year, where the criticism that we had on them was that they think everything's going to be too easy. They think if they just show up and chuck the ball around that things will work out, and they won't. And even last night, it kind of happened. They get back to 12 all and they drop the ball off the kickoff.
A Saliva Havili-inspired comeback.
Yeah, he was great.
I did love that. He's a long term favorite of mine.
The funniest rugby league. The funniest rugby league photo in history is when he's standing on the sideline during a ACT Brumbies game in full Raiders kit. And I still don't want to. I don't want to explain why he's
just representing. He's just representing.
Exactly. Anyway, but they dropped the ball off the kickoff, and you just think, yeah, these guys got back to 12 ball and thought, oh sweet, we're just going to go win this game now. And they did it last week too. They're up by 10 points early in that second half against Manly and thought, yep, job done. And they fell in a heap. And what happened? Manly scored 24 points in about 15 minutes. I looked it up. In the first 50 minutes of both games so far this year, so take the intercept out, because that's not bad defense. That's an intercept. They've conceded 18 points through defense in the first 50 minutes of both those two games, the first 100 minutes of the games combined. And then in the last half hour of both those games, they've let in 40 points. Which is awful. That is really poor. And I don't know whether it's because they're having to work so hard and their star players like Cam Murray having to slog their guts out to cover for everybody else and do so much to keep them in the contest in the first half of games. And maybe that's spilling over to the end and they're just so tired that they can't do anything else. I don't know if that's the reason, but there's something mental and physical about this club that is absolutely broken right now. And I don't know how it gets fixed.
The word that you said that I think sums up this performance is lethargic. And I thought it was a similar thing in the Las Vegas game against Manly. I can't believe how slow they look. I can't believe how ponderous they look. Like I have no doubt they trained hard over the summer and all of that, but they're not playing with any edge. They're not playing with any verve or anything like that, you know? And guys who have been really good players for them in the past. And I'm not talking about Walker and Mitchell. I'm talking about Tevita Totola. I'm talking about Keon Kolomatangi. I'm talking about Tom Burgess. These like they are looking really, really stuck in the mud, you know, and Manly, you know, it remains to be seen what they are, but they certainly have some guys who can be dynamic and that sort of won them the day. And then Brisbane are all dynamic qualities, you know, to the detriment of other things. It's great to watch. And they just sort of blew Souths up a couple of times. And Souths just didn't look like they were athletically capable of matching it with Brisbane in that way, you know? And I think it's a bad sign when your most damaging middle in the first 25 minutes, in the first half of the game, is Shaq Mitchell, you know, which is no shot at Shaq. Like, I thought he was pretty good. But, like, you need more from all your bigger name guys. You know, I don't know. It's really, really tough. Are there any other changes that you would make to this team? Because there's a couple of like really big ideas floating around, namely Mitchell moving out of fullback. Is that something that you would entertain?
If Campbell Graham was fit, I would want Whiten in the halves with Cody Walker, but he's not. So Whiten has to play center unless he plays fullback and Latrell Mitchell plays center. Either of those, to me, are fine at this point. I've been higher on Latrell Mitchell at fullback than most people. I still think that it's a position where he can affect the game more than in any other position. But you look at last night where there's a Damien Cook gets sin binned as a result of Latrell Mitchell misfielding a kick, and the Broncos score a try off Mitchell just having that kick. What happened there on that late try where that kick back in field just bypassed him somehow?
The one that led to the Cook sin bin, that was really poor. He should have just dived on that. The one where Arthur's kicked back inside, Mitchell sort of goes for a bit of a low percentage pickup and then the bounce beats him. Okay. That, like, to me, that wasn't laziness so much as poor judgment.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not suggesting it's a laziness issue in those players. It's more just a, I don't know what it is. It's more application and yeah, maybe that's what they have to do. I don't know if Jason Demetriou has that in him. I don't know if he's
it's a really big call.
And the thing is, I actually think that the symbolism that would come with a call like that is more important than anything else. Because if you the constant murmurs around Souths for the last 2 years have been, oh, Cody and Trell are running the club. Cody and Trell are running the club. The coach has no authority. It's all Cody and Trell, and that's how Souths will operate. If they were to do something like that and move him to the centres, I think that not only would it have an impact in terms of the on-field product maybe being a bit more efficient, I also think that it would give the club itself a kick up the arse that they sorely need, that people would realize, oh, maybe this bloke's serious. This isn't, maybe the inmates aren't running the asylum. This coach isn't a guy that we can trifle with. Whether he could do that and whether they will do that, I doubt it, mate. I really do. I can't see it happening. But at this point, I'll try it. I'll try anything. I'm trying to think of some other changes, like, Alice Duncan's working his way back from injury. I'd love to see him play more minutes. Yep. But what do they do? Because at the moment, like, it's just their middles look so poor, and losing Jaiara certainly doesn't help. But some of those guys you mentioned there, like Big Tom, just feels like I know he's leaving at the end of this year anyway, but it does feel like it's 1 year too many for him. And Totola's not been the guy that he was a couple of years ago either. And it's just super frustrating. And perhaps my earlier call of Sean Kepi is the best prop in the world was ill-advised. Who's to say? I don't know. The jury's still out. The only copium I have here is that Cody Walker's a notoriously slow start. I think it was 2 years ago. He didn't have a try assist until Good Friday, and then we went on to make a prelim or a grand final. I can't remember if it was 21 or 22. It doesn't matter. No, it was 22 because he was in... Oh, I don't know. Who gives a shit? Either way, he never tried assist for a month of the season and had a really good year after that. So he's a notoriously slow starter. And whilst Mitchell had those moments, I do think he's been by a mile South's best attacking player in the first 2 weeks. So I'm not necessarily sure that he's the problem either, but I wouldn't mind the move just to shake things up.
Mm. They've got to get something going for 2-5, and Whiten will help with that once he slots in there. But if you look at the back five they had last night, so I thought Milne carried the ball strongly, but then Kenner, Tass, and Johnson, I just don't, I sound like I'm from Philly or something. I just don't think there's enough athleticism there. Yeah. For what they've got going on. And this is not like, this is not some elaborate thing to punk you with AJ or whatever, but AJ had a bit of a shocker last night. And I think it's clear that whatever top end speed that he once had sort of isn't there anymore. And like, that's fine. You can carry a bloke like that in your back line. Like Canberra did it for a lot of last year with Jared Croker, but you have to compensate for that by having the rest of the back line being very, very athletically potent. You can carry one guy who's there because he does a lot of little things right and he sort of makes up for his lack of speed and power in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
But Johnson, Tass, Kenner, that's three blokes who are all a little bit too similar for my liking. I know Tass is injured at the minute.
He's playing hurt, and his biggest strength is his physicality, which he's not able to really employ right now. But I don't think either Tass or Kenar's in the team when South's with full strength. So that's a problem that will hopefully solve itself when Whiten comes back next week and when Campbell Graham, God knows what's going on there, but when he eventually does come back from that injury, that's hopefully a problem that will resolve itself. But you're right, mate. You are right. They're getting nothing out of those guys right now. And it's just, again, no excuses. They didn't deserve to win, but it's just frustrating that, like, the goal line defense is so poor and those edges are so poor. And teams have targeted Richie Kenner for 2 weeks in a row now, and there's just nothing they can do about it because he has to play because there's nobody else he won't be playing this week, I'd imagine. I would imagine Jack Whiten comes straight in for him, but it's just been such a glaring weakness in that back line. And both Manly and the Broncos have targeted it with aplomb. So, goal line defense, I think, is possibly the most disappointing aspect of this whole thing. It just feels like every time a team gets down our end, they score, or they get a repeat set and then they score. There's no resolve. There's no fight. There's no passion. I don't know why. I have no idea why. Something's got to change.
Mm. The one play that I would encourage everyone to go and look at again, and we can use this as a segue to talking about the Broncos. So Dean Mariner's second try, the chip and chase, which was awesome. Really, really cool. Loved it. I love Dean Mariner. Massive fan. But Walters goes down the blind side on tackle five for no real reason. And Mariner's one-on-one with Johnson, kicks over the top, is the first to the ball easily, right? There's no effort from the South defenders to turn and chase. I understand it's the last tackle and Luttrell's covering the middle of the field, but like when Mariner's scoring the try, Mitchell isn't even on screen. He hasn't even really tried to get across there. And then the guys who are defending at A, it's Keon Kolomatangi, a very experienced and accomplished player at this point. And he just kind of turns around. He doesn't even really try and turn around and make an effort to go sprint back and get it. And I just thought it showed a lot of where the two teams are at. You know, Souths are very listless, very sluggish, very lethargic. And Brisbane, who I didn't think were that great in this game, but they won because they're athletic and hungry and striving for it, you know? And if you have guys like Dean Mariner who can create a chance out of nothing like that, or if you have a guy like Reece Walsh who created several chances out of nothing like that, then that can cover up a lot of your errors. That can cover up a lot of frailties in your team. If you've got blokes who can just whip the fucking game open whenever they want to. Like that first try Reece Walsh scored was incredible. And like one of the Patreon names at the minute, I think he's changed it at the minute, but it was give me the fucking ball, you know? Mm. And that first Walsh try was a real give me the fucking ball try. You know, they were kind of not going anywhere. There wasn't much happening. And then just bang, 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 three right foot steps. And he's through a very soft South's middle and scoring under the post.
Yeah, it's a great try. You know? But again, embarrassing defensively. Embarrassing. And South's had so much good ball in that first half. They could have, the South's of a couple of years ago, the more clinical South's of a couple of years ago would have been up 12-16 nil on this team with the amount of possession they had. But instead, they just look listless. They just shuffle the ball around. There's no imagination. There's no creativity. And yeah, the end result is no points. And then Brisbane, they got the other end, scored their first, basically their first good set, but good ball set, sorry. And it's just like, what are we doing? What the hell's the point? Yeah, it's immensely frustrating, mate. I just don't really know what the way forward is because, again, it's a team that, especially in the forwards, still plays quite well on paper. Like you look at those names and you think that this is a forward pack that are capable of hanging with everyone. And it's just not the reality right now. It just isn't. It just isn't.
Well, we might have to accept the reality that those names on paper aren't what they were. You know,
I think there's a
big possibility of that for a lot of guys. Yeah, but let's. Have you got any more that you want to get off your chest about Souths? Or
not really. I just think that it's immensely frustrating to see what's happened to this club between like the first half of last year and now. I cannot understand it. I just cannot understand it. But it's like the wind. Where does it come from? I don't know.
We're getting meteorological on here today.
It is. I mean, I was smiling and happy when we started 10 minutes ago. And I mean, people can probably hear the change in my tone that's just in the last few minutes. It's gone
rapidly.
What
happened to
downhill.
The boy who smiled?
I am smiling. People can't see. It is like, obviously it sucks, but you've got to remember that it's just footy, isn't it? But fuck me. Footy matters a lot.
Will you shave the moustache?
I really like my mustache.
I know you do, but everyone else likes it too. This is affecting you emotionally. Maybe you have the power. There's only one way to know.
Okay, we'll discuss.
If we want to know, the mo must go.
Listeners, get in touch. We'll discuss it on Monday. I mean, I said I'd do it if we lost this game, and I've never gone back on my word before. But I really like my mustache. I could just grow it again, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing about facial hair. It grows back.
Oh, slow down, kid. wish forehead hair grew back, but
self burn. Those are rare.
Are they? I feel like my whole shtick on the show is just self burns.
You are going to a deep dark place.
I'm like Charlie Brown with the football, just missing it,
but pulling it out of your own way.
Yeah, somehow flexible.
So let's talk a little bit more about Brisbane. Walsh obviously just fantastic at the back, the most electrifying player in the league. If you don't like watching him play, then
who doesn't like watching Reece Walsh play? Why was this a discussion last night?
I know a good few people who don't like him. They say like he's arrogant and he's loose as a player and all that sort of shit. And it's like
he definitely is those things, but that's awesome.
That's why I like him. I like him because you know it's very clear. It's very clear that he wants to make big plays all the time because he thinks he can.
Yeah,
and I love that he can make an error and then
that
totally
forward pass
brush
was hilarious. That was funny. The one out of dummy half where he just like dropped the ball.
Oh yeah,
3 meters
forward. So he did that right, and South's got the ball, and then the next time Brizzy got possession back, and it's the fourth tackle, and they go to Walsh, and he nearly drops it again, but he gets it back, puts a good kick down into the corner. Latrell brings it back. Walsh flies down there and like throws himself into him. You know, and like I love that sort of thing. You know, there were obviously the great flashy plays that he made and the two tries he scored and all that. But that to me, backing up that error with a play like that, I think that shows Walsh's true character.
Well, that's the thing. Who was it? Dion Waiters, the quote like, if I go 0-for-8, that's worse than going 0-for-24 because it means I lost confidence and stopped shooting.
Yeah.
That's Reece Walsh.
He's never going to be a percentages player. He's never going to be like a by the numbers player. But like he was in a bit of a funk and he got himself out of it through putting in a great gut busting effort on a kick chase. That is what tells me that he's the true skill.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around this. So every Broncos fan I've ever met loves Reece Walsh. They would die for him, right? Mm. And everything you just mentioned, both the good and bad, is true. It's 100% true. But if you're not a Broncos fan, why would the errors and stuff matter to you? And like, you wouldn't care at all. It's like how we always loved watching Dave Taylor and stuff because it was like, cool shit's going to happen.
It's a backlash. Who doesn't like watching Reese Walsh? No. Just listen. It's a backlash to hearing how good he is all the time.
Oh, okay. All right. You know, well, those people are losers.
It's part of that whole thing. Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
Okay. Forget
it. They're the ones missing out. What else? I thought Mariner was really strong. I really like how he's settling on that right wing. I thought Selwyn Cobbo was fantastic. And I think that's 2 weeks in a row. He's been really, really good in the centers. I didn't understand what people were talking about after round one, where they said they didn't like him there. I actually think he looks more comfortable there than he ever did on the wing. And he's found a great mix of being an attacking weapon while still working really hard in yardage. And he's shown a great ability to set up stuff for his outside men as well. That tip onto Arthur's was really, really difficult. Yeah. But he managed to make it happen. I've been so impressed with him through 2 weeks.
Yeah, you mentioned the lack of creativity in that South backline. That was the difference in this game for me. It's that, so like, whilst Brisbane's forwards were better, I don't think they were that much better. And I think that it was just the spark they had from these guys to pull stuff out of nowhere was the difference in the end. And Mariner, not only has he taken Corey Oates' spot on the Broncos, he's now taken Corey Oates' role of terrorizing Souths. So that's his first game. That's his first game against the Grand Old Club. Scored 2 tries. Looked unbelievably good. And I look forward to this happening twice a year, every year again.
Corey Oates' reign of cruelty is over. Let a whole new reign of cruelty wash over this lazy club.
Yeah. Oh God. They should say. Someone said they should say Mariner. The commentator should say Mariner sets sail every time he goes for a run, and I agree with that.
Oh, Vossi's got that in him.
He should.
100%. What else with Brisbane before we move on? I thought Tony Staggs had a really strong game. I love it when he uses his athleticism on both sides of the ball. Chip kick more, Katoni. I'm not against it. Brisbane are very clearly still working some stuff out. I don't think they're anything close to what they will be further down the line. But sort of the talent and strike they have across the field can cover a lot of those gaps. There were a few Broncos fans who, after our preview where I said how much I rated Kobe Hetherington, they sort of got onto me and said, you haven't watched him like we have. He's actually gone backwards a little bit. And they're right about that. I thought he had a bit of a shocker. I think he bombed a couple of tries. And I think if Brisbane are fair dinkum about getting their best 17, he probably needs a bit of a spell. But when we're talking about spelling bench props, then we're pretty close.
I will say, though, I think that their middle rotation outside of the big two is somewhat of a concern. I think that they've lost a lot of talent in that position, and it doesn't, like, the period where Souths got back to the game was the period where they had
Hetherington and Tupou were on the field at the same time,
and that bench does not inspire me in any way, shape, or form. Really, like, it's Fletcher Baker, Kobe Hetherington, Marty Tupou. Like, they didn't get much out of any of those guys last night, I thought. And
well, Baker was okay.
He's all right, but like that's what I mean. Like, I feel like the loss of Tom Flegler is not one that, like, it didn't get spoken about that much during the off season, but I feel like it's quite a big loss. I think he was very, very, very clearly their third best middle, and the drop off between him and the rest of those guys, I think, is pretty big, mate. I really do think that this could be a problem for them going forward. People were saying, oh, the Broncos didn't get out of the first gear. So I disagree. I thought the Broncos tried very hard. They were doing short slow plays. They were running the ball last. They were trying everything they could to win this game, and I thought they tried hard. I just don't think they played that well. And this isn't bitterness, because, like, I don't care. I like the Broncos. I want all our Broncos listeners to be happy, and we have more Broncos listeners than any other team, I think. So yeah, nothing against them. I just don't think they played particularly well. And this is 2 weeks now where I haven't been overly impressed with what I've seen from them.
I can take your point on that. I thought Billy Walters had a bit of a tough game at dummy half. And
what's the deal with Reynolds, by the way?
I don't know. I haven't seen anything around this morning. But in fairness, I haven't been that online. I was out doing some work stuff. But Walters had a bit of a tough game. He had one of those games where he sort of stifles the attack a fair bit. And I take your point about the bench middles. But you could have made the same... Flegler aside, you could have made the same case about their non-starting middles last year. And then it was Palacio who sort of emerged from nowhere to become incredibly effective for them down the stretch. So I'm sort of backing their program to find something in one of these guys that maybe we just haven't seen yet, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, losing him as well was I think, a bit of a loss. But anyway, yeah, we'll see. They'll probably be fine, because I think their back five is so talented that they can pull wins out of their ass like they kind of did last night. But mate, if Reynolds is seriously hurt, that's a big deal. Well, I just typed his name into Google News now. There's no update since last night. So, but we'll see. Like, if it's a serious knee injury, then yeah, not good. Yeah. What are they going to do?
You know what I did last night?
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on end. He's after it. He moves. Green Carp.
That's right. I Coltrane the Broncos. It's a flawlessly executed temporal pincer, just like in Tenet. I did it. I'm 2-0. I'm leading the pack. Look at me go.
I can't believe this. As long as you submitted the form,
I did. So because I couldn't take the Sharks to beat the Bulldogs this week, because I had the Bulldogs last week, and I wasn't sure about the Dragons and the Dolphins because I'm wary about overreacting or underreacting to round one. And I was going to go Storm and Warriors, but then as kickoff approached and I was feeling very confident about the Bronx, and I was like, you know what? I'll just bank it. And then the rest of the weekend can just be a treat. Just have a little bit of me time. Not stress about the Coltrane Cup. Just bask in the glory of being 2-0, and I did it. Mm. I did it, fellas.
Look at you. Look at you go.
Look at me
on
go.
On top. On top. But yeah, good stuff from you. 2-0. Undefeated. Who can stop him? I hate this sport.
Try! Try! This is a try! Brilliant! Brilliant play! I think it's a try! Oh, I don't know if this is going to be a try!
Gee, what about this bloke?
All right, it is time for our weekly segment where we take a trip down memory lane and talk about a player from yesteryear. Usually late 90s, early 2000s is our sweet spot. Last year was a bit more modern, and so is this one, Nick.
Yeah, so sitting around and naming old footy players is the finest thing a person can do. It's literally my favorite thing to do in the entire world. And we had a bit of controversy at What About This Bloke headquarters this week, because as we said on the show last week, beloved patron Bruce the Pom was selected. Some communication difficulties stopped Brucey from getting the name in. He actually, I'm pretty sure he still lives in England. He's not one of those 10-pound poms who lives down here. He's born and raised in Wigan, and I think he still might be over there.
Yeah.
So Brucey's been pushed back a week. He's going to do it next week, and that's when we're going to take our trip to Super League.
Okay.
So today, another beloved patron, Hunter Austin, man of many names, but a fixture on the Patreon scene, and a good Dragons man besides. We're going back-to-back Dragons here. He has gone into the archives and dug out the man so nice they named him twice, Khalifa Faifailoa.
Fantastic. What a name. One of the all-time rugby league names.
It can't be easy having a name like this, because it is a crown that you must bear. You know, if your name is Khalifa Faifailoa and you are not a good footballer, then that's tough, man. It's tough to be shifting bricks with a name like Khalifa Faifailoa. That is a star's name. And he was a star for a brief period there.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And an NRL grid mainstay these days, you would say.
A good gridsman. A fine gridsman.
Yeah. I remember him being... Like, there was a fair bit of hype when he came on the scene with the Dragons. I think that was mainly because of his name being cool. I think he scored a try and debut, right? Like, he was a big part of their Toyota Cup team in 2009, and then got a couple of games in 2010.
Well, he started in first grade. He played a bit of 20s at the Knights as well. Okay. I actually think Faifailoa had a bit of a tough upbringing. Sort of had some demons in his younger years. Bounced around a couple of different clubs. Did come on the scene at Saints, played two games in 2010. In the second one, he scored a double. Then he really burst onto things in North Queensland in 2011, where he had a great season, became a really good yardage winger. He's one of those wingers who very, very stocky, very, very strong, great in yardage, but had big plays in him as well. Could dive to the corner and do some awesome shit to get the ball down. You know, and was sort of doing that from the time he came into first grade. He struck up a really cool little combo with Matt Bowen, which was great. Like, Matt Bowen, a perennial favorite of everyone with love in their heart.
Correct.
And he is just linking up with this nuggety Kiwi winger who just loved trying to run through things, you know? And like that first year at the Cowboys, that was like the best year of his career. That was kind of as good as it ever got. Yeah, but he played for New Zealand, did some great stuff. I was always a tremendous fan of Faifailoa's, and way longer than I should have. Like, even as late as 2017, I was still like, man, under the right coach, maybe it can still happen, you know? And I love those sorts of guys. I have a real weakness for them.
Well, mate, Illawarra cut as hero on their en route to the premiership in 2016. And then I believe played in the reserve grade Super Bowl as well. And when they put 50 on Burley, right?
Big game player.
That's what you, that's big what you game player. Do.
Steel legend. Hasn't paid for a Illawarra Steel Ale in 8 years. And nor should
Nor should anyone. It's terrible.
No, it's not a good beer. Are you kidding? Oh, dude. Nigel Smith, your mentor, is going to hate you saying that.
He hates me anyway. It's fine. But I did find this on Khalifa Fifi Law from the middle of last year. An unlikely field goal hero emerged during Brothers Friday Night Light rivalry showdown with South. This is up in Townsville. In the form of former New Zealand international Khalifa Fifi Law. They were down 18-6 and ended up winning 19-18. A clutch one-on-one strip by Brothers centre John Cullen, who I can only assume is related to Cam Cullen somehow, gave the Fish great field position, and that's when Khalifa Fifi Law stepped up to attempt a field goal with 30 seconds remaining. In 109 professional matches, Fifi Law had never converted a field goal, but his attempt flew true.
You got to love it. And not only was he still playing local footy last year, he's back playing Q Cup now. Mm. He played for Townsville Blackhawks last weekend. How's this for some names, dude? So he's on the wing. His center partner was Gehemat Shibasaki, Pearl Diver himself.
Yeah.
Lining up in the front row was James Tarmo.
Okay.
They had former Cowboy Matt Wright on the bench, Kyle Labert, PNG International, locking the scrum. And the coach, none other than your friend and mine, Terry Campese.
Wow.
Unbelievable vibes at the Blackhawks at the minute.
What about those blokes?
That, bro, a bloke-heavy team.
Is Aaron Payne involved somehow?
No, he's at West now.
Is he?
I'm pretty sure he is, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, you're at West today, so I'd hope you...
I didn't see him out there. But what about that one of the Tigers' 2005 opponents taking up the cause for the rivals? Yeah, Aaron Payne is coaching reserve grade at the Tigers this year.
Oh, good work, Aaron.
Yeah.
Good on you.
But Fifi-Loa, after the Cows, he had a couple of years at the Gold Coast. They didn't end in great fashion. You can Google that and find out why. And then he went back to Saints for another couple of seasons before he sort of went back up to Townsville and played a whole lot of Queensland Cup. Here's a pointless yet somewhat interesting stat. His first year in first grade, he was at Saints, 2 tries in 2 games. His last year in the NRL, also at Saints, 2 tries in 2 games.
Full circle. Yeah. What a story.
Brother, Fifi Lowry does it in twos.
Yep. So Bruce the Pom will be up next week, but if you want your chance to select a player in future, patreon.com/rookies. Why do they call them 10-pound poms, by the way?
Because it used to be 10 pounds to catch the steamship out here, man.
Ah, okay. There you go. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on and talk about some footy.
Let's do it, baby.
6 p.m. Already a banner day for the Sharks. Scott Morrison stepping down as their number one ticket holder. But now they get, you know, a free win tonight. So it's good for them. Good few hours.
They're
going to win by a lot.
Yeah, it's difficult to see Canterbury really challenging the Sharks here because, like, even if the Sharks have turned a corner after last week with their toughness and all that, these are the games where they feast. You know, there is blood in the water. And the Jaws music is playing.
Yeah. Whatever criticism you have of the Sharks, it is not applicable here because even when they've had their issues, they put bad teams to the sword, and they will put
100%. What I would like to see from Cronulla, and this sort of stood up when I was like reviewing some tape from last week on the winning try, the CSIFA Talakai try.
Mm.
The previous play, they spread the ball nearly the whole way across from left to right. And then on the next play, which is the play they score the try, they go all the way back across the field again. And the formation that they use was really, really interesting to me. A lot of teams can't get the ball all the way across the field in one play, let alone in back-to-back plays, let alone what the Sharks dished up, which was this really nice interchange of passing. They had, I think, Blake Brayley as sort of the link man in the middle of the field. And then they had, on his outside, they had two dummy runners and Brayley passed in between them. And it sort of just really held up the Warriors' defense. Mm. It was a really sophisticated pattern that they ran. And the fact that they were doing it off the bounce, off a break, was really, really impressive. So Cronulla are always going to be pretty potent because their back five is so good and because Trindle and Kennedy and Hines are all so creative. But the idea of running more sophisticated patterns for them, scheming up some stuff in addition to getting just the natural athleticism of their 2-5. That's a really interesting thing to me. So while I have no doubt that they could just steamroll over the Bulldogs out wide, I would like to see them use a little bit of that similar craft along the way.
Yeah. No, Josh had a car, of course, but a revenge game. Connor Tracy, he's back playing on the wing at Shark Park, as he so often did last year. Could be a potential reserve grade, revenge game for Bronson Cherry as well. Sitting there in Jersey, as the Jersey 19 is the 18th man as we speak. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, difficult for me to get too excited about this Bulldogs team after what they dished up last week. I think that this should be a very comfortable Cronulla win.
It should be. I would like to see Canterbury attack this game with a lot of expansive footy. Chuck the ball around.
Yeah, chuck it around.
I don't think they'll be able to go through Cronulla, especially I think Cronulla will be pretty solid defensively. I like Toby Rudolph getting the start. I do think he's earned that. So I'd like to see the Bulldogs wheel and deal as much as they can, but I just don't think that that's a way that they're sort of being trained to attack these matches. I think that's unlikely, but I do think that's the best path to victory for them. And, Matt Burton, for the love of Christ, please put some of those psycho torps, because can you imagine one of those in a Shark Park breeze? Could land in Woolaware. It's very exciting.
I guess the Sharks, hey, the 1-2 punch off the bench with tall Tom Hazelton and also tall Tuku Hautapua, who's making his club debut. Two large lads.
Yeah,
two big men.
I'm keen to see how Tafua goes.
Yeah, a good spot to debut, I think.
Yeah. They got him off the Roosters. I liked him at the Roosters. He was a bit raw, but he clearly had something about him. But then he sort of just dropped out of their rotation. I don't think he's played first grade in a good while. And then he ended up at the Sharks, and I think he took a little bit of time to acclimatize, but maybe he has now. Yeah, he last played NRL in 2021. You know, so it's a long time to be away, but maybe he stepped it up, and maybe he can sort of stiffen up that Cronulla middle that did look a little bit better. The opening 20 minutes aside, that did look a lot better last week. So yeah, I'm keen to see how he goes.
Yeah, can't call train him, would if I could. Please remember the rules, everyone. Someone's going to tip this illegally, aren't they?
Run him through the rules one last time.
You can't tip the team that you tipped. So you can't tip the same team twice or against the same team twice. You picked Parramatta to beat the Bulldogs last week. You can't pick the Sharks to beat the Bulldogs this week. Someone's going to do it. Someone will do it. Just don't make it. Just make sure it's not you.
As I get more family members listening to the show, it's more likely that one of them's going to do it.
Yes. But come on, boys. Just lift. All right. Anyway, big game. 8 o'clock. A replay of the 2022 grand final. Penrith taking on Parramatta. Parramatta played really well in that game at the end of last season when they knocked Penrith off at Penrith Stadium. Can they do it again, Nick?
So I don't think so, but you do think so.
I tip Parramatta. I think they're going to win this game.
Talk me through it.
Well, I do think that even when Penrith were this behemoth they still are, but this all-conquering team, that Parramatta were the one opponent that was able to get to them to an extent. And I just think that with the guys they've lost this year in the makeup of their forward pack, they might take a few weeks to get going. I still think they're going to win the comp, Penrith, but they might take a couple of weeks to get going. And I think that Parramatta had a really good hit out last week. I think they didn't really have to try too hard to get that comfortable win over the Dogs in the end. And I feel like now, knowing that Moses is healthy, he had that groin issue at the end of the game last week, but he seems to have shaken off and he's set to play. So they're relatively full strength. And I just think that ask me again in the finals, different story, but for this week, I think that Parramatta is in a better position than Penrith. And I'm shocked that they are as wide of an outsider as they are in the betting market. I think they're over $3 last time I checked. But
Do it.
No. Please. The Coltrane Cup encourages cowardice. It doesn't reward bravery. I genuinely think that there's a lot to like about this Parramatta team. And I think that they are pretty well placed to spring the upset here. I think that Penrith's still reeling from last week and the World Cup Challenge. I think it's going to take them a couple of weeks to work their way out of this funk. They will do it. They will 100% do it. I have no doubt. But I think it's going to take them a couple of weeks to get going. And I think the Parramatta get them at a good time.
Yeah, look, I can definitely see where you're coming from with that. But just as Parramatta doing okay against Penrith in some spots over the last few years is true, what is also true is Penrith do their best work when they have something to fight against. And when they feel like they have something to prove to themselves or to somebody else. And I think that after they were held scoreless last week, something like that is almost like a red rag to a bull for these Panther dudes. You know, I think that they'll be talking themselves into a frenzy all week about how everyone thinks we're done and everyone thinks we're washed and everyone thinks it's over, but we're going to go out there and we're going to show them. And I think even if they don't have some of the attacking craft that they've shown in the past, I think that is something they're going to have to try and develop as the season goes on. I think that sort of overwhelming physicality is going to be too much for Penrith to, for Parramatta to handle. And I actually think when you look at the matchups, particularly in the back line, I don't know if Parramatta are going to be able to stop a direct forceful approach from some of those Penrith backs, particularly someone like Taylan May or Isaac Tungo. You know, I think they'll look, the Panthers will look at that Tungo Morgan Harper matchup and think there could be some real joy there for us. I know Mitch Kenny is not a superstar, but he does his job in this Panthers team very well. He's back. Scott Sorensen's back on the edge. I like Dane Laurie coming in at 14, which is apparently meant to be happening.
Is that going to be a late change that they're going to spring because he's still 18 on the team?
Yeah,
right?
That was the word.
Okay, all right.
Yesterday, I think Sonny Luke offered some spark against Melbourne, but I think a bit too often he was sort of running his own race and not playing through to the structures of the team. I think Laurie is sort of the creative presence.
That'd mean 80 minutes for Kenny, right? They wouldn't be chucking on Dane Laurie to play hooker, would they? Or would they?
I think they might.
Oh, okay, fine.
I think they might. Not for too long now, but I think he can handle it.
I would love to see Parramatta do what they did last week again. Start Joe Ofengawe, unleash Junior Bello after half an hour. Because, I think this is a real... I look at Parramatta's bench and, you know, especially I think Joe O is a very solid prop. And if he starts and can take the sting out of that game a little bit with obviously Penrith having the best middle in the comp by... Or maybe Brisbane, but possibly the best middle in the comp. He starts, takes the sting out of the game. And then you look at Penrith's bench, there's not a lot of power in those forwards that they've got on the bench. And you look across at Parramatta's and they're bringing on Ryan Madison and Junior Bello after 25-30 minutes. Yeah. I think that's an area that they could find some joy.
That opening punch from the Panthers is such a hard thing to wear. But if you can take it and you're still standing, you might be able to do some of your best work when Leota and Fish are off the field together. I thought that was the case with Melbourne last week. Mm-hmm. And they sort of got enough of a go in the middle of the field that even when Fish and Leota came back on, Penrith couldn't fully drag it back. So I'm with you. I want to see Parra make that move again.
Yeah. All right. But so you're taking Penrith. I'm taking Parramatta.
I am still taking Penrith. But I think it'll be a big rowdy one out there, man.
Can't wait.
This is the last year of the old Panther Stadium. I think every game out there is going to be a fucking... I was going to say a rave, but that's not sort of like Western Sydney enough, is it? Yeah. I don't know. I've never actually been to a rave. I don't know what they're like. Anyway, it'll be a good time at the very least. So
I'm now imagining you at a rave, and it just
it's not for me, man. You gotta know where you want to go.
Proper, what's a polar bear doing in Arlington, Texas areas?
What's that?
There's this meme. It's like a polar bear's in Texas, and so people use it whenever there's like someone is somewhere they shouldn't be.
Was it actually Ben Hannon?
It might have been. You're just asking questions. All right, your beloved Canberra Raiders are in action at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. We'll talk about them in a minute, but you were down at Benji Marshall's media thing this morning for the West Tigers, who are making their first appearance for the year. They had the bye in round one. What was the vibe out west?
So the vibe at every single Benji Marshall media event I have ever been to. So I wouldn't say I know Benji or anything like that, but I'm sort of a bit familiar with his manner because like I've interviewed him a good few times now. He's a very, very relaxed dude, you know, like, and I think that's something that is going to rub off on this Tigers team. He's very relaxed, but in a very confident sort of way. So the big things we were talking about today at the presser was everyone was asking about Lachlan Galvin, right? Who's the 18-year-old kid who they're going to debut at 5'8". And Benji had sort of said from the start of the preseason that he wasn't going to worry about names or reputations. If you trained hard and you earned the spot, you were going to get it. And that's something a lot of coaches say, you know, a lot of coaches say that when they take over, it makes for good copy in the summer. All the journos take it at face value because everyone's just desperate to write a goddamn story, but he's living up to it. You know, Benji's a man of his word. He thinks Galvin had a better preseason than Caesar. Caesar's a bit troubled by a hamstring injury. So Galvin gets the start. It's the same with Solomon Fa'atape in the centers. Like, he's given these young blokes a go. And I think because he has that relaxed manner, because he's very much approaching this like with these young guys as a just go out there and do what I know you can do, that you do what you know you can do. Like if I was a young player, that would give me enormous confidence, you know. And I think we have a tendency in rugby league and in a lot of other sports as well to look for the drill sergeant coach, the yep. real hard ass who's going to yell and scream and make you a man through fear and anger and all that sort of stuff. But I know me personally, the coaches that I respond to, the leaders that I respond to, are guys that I want to do well for, guys that I really want to strive and go the extra mile for, not because I'm afraid of what they'll say if I don't. I'm not making the effort because I'm scared of you. I'm making the effort because I want to do it for you. I think that's a really powerful thing, and I think that's something that Benji is going to instill in this side. Like, is that sort of confidence that Benji has in himself and his own process, will that hold up if West lose their first four games? I don't know. And it's still incredibly hard to know what kind of coach Benji is going to be, because apart from those couple of games he had in the last year, we don't know, because he's never coached a team before. But I think that the early signs are really, really good. I like that he's going about this in a low-key way that still has a lot of confidence behind it. So I like, regardless of who they'd be playing, I'd be very keen to see how they go this weekend.
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on end. He's after it. He might have got it down. Oh, he thinks he did. Oh!
Coltrane car.
Having said all that, I've Coltrane Canberra.
Oh, you piece of shit.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like this.
Coltrane Canberra twice last year. They lost both of those games. So I'm sorry in advance, Nicholas. Sorry in advance.
You're not sorry at all. You don't believe in anything anymore.
That's true. I'm going to law school. But I think Lachie Galvin and Jaden Sullivan halves combination on the road against a Canberra team that, you know, as far from a welcoming party as I can imagine in terms of attitude, they will scratch and claw and do everything they can to win this game and to frustrate the Tigers and to make them uncomfortable. And I think that they can get to them quite easily, in fact. I think West might be... I definitely do agree that West is building something. And I think that Benji's saying all the right things, and he's very much impressed me so far, as he has impressed you. But that's going to take some time. This is rugby league. This is a rebuild. This isn't like when a soccer team gets a new coach and they play different tactically and, oh, wow, new first game. They look amazing. I think it's going to take some time for the West Tigers to be like that. And I think that a settled, grizzled veteran team like the Canberra Raiders right now should have their measure.
Look, they should. That's precisely why I'm terrified that they won't. You know, like this is the way the game is played. So I quite like the West Tigers forward pack. I think that's going to be a real strength for them all of this season. So I think for Canberra to win this game, keeping it tight and just trying to rumble it up the guts might not be enough. I want to see Canberra swing the ball. I want to see him use that back line a fair bit, because I think from 2 to 5, especially, Canberra are far, far, far more dangerous. I said on the show last week in reviewing the Raiders win over the Knights that there are some weeks where Canberra only have one backline spread in them. This week, I'm aiming high. I want to see 2, maybe even 3 backline spreads.
How audacious.
I know.
Look at you being daring.
I know, man. But, you know, sometimes you gotta aim high. But I think they are capable of playing a bit more expansively than they were against the Knights. You know, that was not an intimidating environment, but certainly a hostile environment that they were going into up there. Strange's first start in the halves. It's Smithy's first start at lock, so he's obviously not going to be quite down with the timing of his passes or anything like that. I'm hoping that Canberra can go into this with a little bit more of an expansive attitude towards their attack. Mm-hmm. Like, I really want to see Seb Chris get one-on-one with Startoa as much as he can. I really want to see Matsumoko get on one-on-one with Solomona Fa'atape again. Lachlan Galvin, I've only seen him play a little bit in trials. I don't think it's fair to sort of say what we expect from him, but I can tell you what I've seen. He's a big kid. He's 190 centimeters. He's a large lad. They reckon defense is a real strength of his. And I think the play with him might not be to run directly at him. Make him make decisions. Make him make decisions under fatigue. Make him make decisions more quickly than he's used to, because the only games he's ever played against men are the two trial games that he's played earlier this year.
You know? Let's say
you got to test him as best you can.
If Lachlan Galvin either passes the ball in like, not in like a quick shift, but in like an actual spread, or kicks the ball. So in positions where he's going to leave his body prone. Let's say he does that 15 times in this game. How many times is Hudson Young going to hit him after the ball is gone?
16.
Correct.
Yeah. I'm not saying they should do that. Like I always want to see debutants do well and all that. But like, if you don't think that Ricky Stewart is inventing lies about things Lockie Galvin has done to various Raiders family members to fire up the boys a little bit, like, sorry, you just don't know how Canberra plays this game, you know? And it is going to be Benji mentioned this in his presser. He said, Canberra is a tough team. It's a hard trip. It's a tough place to play. And they're going to try and bash him. Like, we know that they're going to try and bash him, but but Benji said, I wouldn't have picked him if I didn't think he could handle
it. I love that Benji's backing him. I love that.
Me too.
But I can't think of many worse places to go on your debut than down to Canberra to face the mean machine, you know? But yeah, see what happens. I think Canberra win easy.
Hope so.
What time is this game? 3 o'clock. So at 4:23 PM, I'm going to text you when you're up 12 with 10 to go and say congratulations. Is that fine?
Don't like it. I like that Albert Hopewadi has held his spot for Canberra over Nick Kotrick. I think that's a really good move. You know that Hopewadi and Simoko didn't get the – I don't think they got the ball once in like a clean backline shift last week, and they combined for 301 metres.
Yeah, that's outrageous.
That is how you do it, brother. Damn. Mm.
Yeah, really good. Can we have Trey Mooney?
No, you can have Emre Güler.
Do I get a discount at What's Up Brothers?
I'm sure you can negotiate something.
Condor Park's finest, shout out. But All right, let's move on. Canberra win easy, I think.
Big shout out to Aiden Caesar coming home. He's
32. Oh, yeah, what's going on there? Why is he wearing the 14?
He's 32. He's on the bench. It might be over. I still haven't given up.
Hey, I'll take it tomorrow.
My Aiden Caesar belief is only going to get stronger.
There is not a show on earth that believes in Aiden Caesar more than NRL Boom Rookies. I'll tell you that much for free. East Hills Bulldog turned Canberra legend. Really ticking all the
boxes. It's so funny that he's coming off the bench and that he might end up playing hooker or something
Oh my God. Do you have footage of that? I laugh about it all the time when I think about Aiden Caesar.
Bro, you got to dig it up and chug it on the socials.
So if people don't know what we're talking about, tell them.
In the 2017 World Cup, Josh Hodgson did his knee, right? And he was going to miss the first half of the 18 season, and Canberra was scratching around for hookers. And they found Saliva Havili. That's when he came to the club and he did really well, but he couldn't play 80 minutes. So they had to figure something else out. So they started, but it was a couple of weeks before the season started, and a rumor went around that one of the halves was going to duck in at hooker, and it might be Austin, it might be Sam Williams, it might be Aiden Caesar. No one was really sure. I went down there for Canberra's full squad media op at the start of the season. I was talking to Aiden Caesar, and I said to him, man, there's a bit of chat going around that you might duck in at hooker. Like, what's going on? And he said, mate, I haven't spent a second training at hooker all summer. Haven't spent a single training session there. It would be really unprofessional if they put me in at hooker without doing that. And Ricky's not unprofessional, so it'll be fine. Round one happens, and Aiden Caesar comes off the bench and plays hooker, and he hates it. Like, it's not like he didn't say anything in the media. It's not like he rang me up and he said, "Campo, I hate this." He didn't have to. You could see the way he played in there. He was just thinking, what the fuck am I doing?
He looks up at the coach's box at one point. He just looks at Ricky Stewart.
The final straw was round three or round four. They're playing the Warriors. This is the game that we talked about with Luke Bateman, the Bachelor himself, when he was on the show last year. Sean Johnson kicks two field goals in 2 minutes at the end to win it for the Warriors. And Sam Lassonde just ruins Aiden Caesar's day. He's fending him in the face. He's kicking the shit out of him. After every tackling, like, Caesar is staring up at the coach's box, hoping for either redemption or death. Like, just please end this, Ricky. I have never seen someone hate playing a position more than Aiden Caesar hated playing hooker.
If someone's got the footage, please send it to us.
Oh, I loved send it. It was great. There's a great photo of Lassonde putting the big fend on into Caesar's face. And when Caesar got named on the bench and a couple of my Raiders guys were like, "It's happening again," I said to one of them, "Send the photo." And I didn't have to say which photo. They all knew, you know. Out there and start hooking in the scrum, Aiden. Let's go.
We still believe in Aiden Caesar, and we always
will. Always a perennial favorite.
5:30, Cowboys flying the Knights. this was the corresponding fixture last year where we'd arrange for the pub to play better by Screaming Jets when the Knights won in honor of our good friend Harry Ramage, who had a rare night off from his fatherly duties and was out watching with us. And then they blew it. They blew it at the end. They didn't know better, Nick. They didn't get anywhere.
Well, when they said you'd never get anywhere, they were right.
Yeah.
This is an interesting game to me because
me too.
It boils down to a critical round one question. How much do you believe in what you saw? How much of round one is real and how much of it is start of season weirdness? Because if you go off the round one form guide, the cows romp this in. So how much do you believe in what you saw from these two teams in the first round of the season?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, so far, 100% of the games that we've seen in round two have accurately reflected what happened in round one. So there's no reason to expect otherwise.
That's stats, baby.
Yeah, a rough week for the Knights last week, but they really couldn't get out of their own way a lot of the time. A lot of that was self-inflicted. It was pretty sloppy stuff from them. I don't think it would be repeated that. I actually think this game is probably the toughest one of the week to pick. I think this is going to be a really competitive fixture. I think both teams match up really, really well. I think that they've both got game-breaking players on both sides of the on each side of the field. I'm really excited to see how Tom Jenkins goes. Obviously, couldn't crack that Penrith team, and how could you with how settled and how great it is? Goes up to Newcastle, gets a chance there on the wing this week. And with Kai Pierce-Paul starting as well, I'm really liking those changes for the Knights. I'm liking them a lot. It wasn't enough for me to swing me to pick them, but I think that this is going to be a really competitive game. I'm really keen for this one.
I think it'll be really competitive as well. I would hope that that first round loss to Canberra was a bit of a wake up call for the Knights because I think I don't know if they're going to be able to match last year, but I think they're certainly a lot better than what they showed last week. And I think there is a few guys who really, really sort of needed the kick a little bit. And if they don't come correct to this, I think there's a chance that the Cowboys cut them up because the Cowboys are not the Raiders who will just try and, you know, beat down the door even if they have a key. The Cowboys are lock pickers, man, you know, and they are not afraid to throw the door open and like send a whole lot of shit through, you know. They are expansive. They are dangerous on both sides of the field. They have an ability to sort of change the point of attack really, really quickly. And even if they're not going to be putting up 43 points every week, I do think they're going to be a dangerous attacking team more weeks than not. So the Knights have really, really got to come correct to this one. To that end, I am taking the Cowboys. I would like to see them, like if I was a Cowboys fan, if I was back on the ranch with, you know, doing my thing, I would like to see the Cowboys have to earn this one through the middle of the field a little bit first because they didn't have to do that against the Dolphins. Jason Tamalolo played the first 25 minutes and then didn't come back on because the game was already won. I would like to see them tested a little bit in that sense. And I think the Knights are going to be able to do that and maybe even a little bit more. I'd want a lot out of Jacob Sofidi. I'd want a lot out of Leo Thompson. I would hope that Adam Elliott just gets long, uninterrupted minutes at lock forward. He's a big minute player. I don't know why so many coaches have tried to use him as an impact guy. I'm very keen to see Kai Pierce-Paul at second row. I thought he did some really good stuff in limited minutes against Canberra. But there is also the teething problems that come with starting in the NRL. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Cowboys sent a lot of traffic his way. Not that he can't make the tackles, but more about decision-making and effort on effort and things that he hasn't had to do in Super League as much.
Who are some guys on the Knights, especially that you need to see bounce backs from? I think Phoenix Crossland, who I was a big fan of last year, he had a really tough game in round one. I'm hoping that he can bounce back well. And I think that a couple of guys in that back line, chiefly Dane Gagai, had a pretty tough game last week. But beyond them, I think it's those halves. I'm really looking at them to engage the line a little bit more. I think that was their biggest problem last week was that they just didn't do enough to make the Raiders think that Kalen Ponga wasn't getting the ball or that the play wasn't going through Kalen Ponga. They just didn't engage the line enough for my liking. And then the one time they did right at the end, they scored a try. So, yeah, I'd love to see more of that from them. And the Cowboys are a team that you can get out. They're not exactly the most stout team defensively. They're a team that if you shift the ball around, you can find some joy pretty much anywhere on the field. So, yeah, I'd love to just see a bit more directness from their playmakers in this one, along with guys like Crossan and Gagai, I think, need to bounce back. I think they both can bounce back.
I actually disagree with you on Gagai. I thought he was their most dangerous player last week. But with Crossland, because Crossland's game, like so much of it is based on effort, I'm pretty confident that he'll be able to get something going at the very least. I think he'll probably simplify his approach, probably won't try and create as much out of hooker, he'll probably just focus on clean service and tackling well, and that was the foundation of his improvement last year. So I'm actually expecting him to be quite solid. I'm with you on the halves. They need to play straighter. They need to engage the line more. I actually think that starts more with Hastings than it does with Gamble. And so, yeah, he'd be the one that I'd be looking to as well to sort of really lead the improvement for the Knights. But like I said, I'm not sure it's going to be enough. I'm going the Cowboys, but I think it will be a testing one.
Yeah, this is the toughest game of the round to pick, in my opinion. I've gone Cowboys also, but yeah, I think this will be a banger. So let's hope so. Storm hosting the Warriors on Saturday night. Still no Cam Munster. We still don't know what's going on there. I mean, those comments that we spoke about last week on the show were a bit concerning. They're still not really sure when he's coming back. But yeah, they're hosting a Warriors team who will be chomping at the bit to bounce back after what was really flat last hour of that game last week. But there aren't many worse places to go for them than Melbourne. As famously, they do not play the Storm well.
They don't. They don't. When was their last win at Amy Park? I should have pulled
it
up
right now. Sorry.
I believe it was 1994.
That sounds right. Yep. Stacey Jones hat trick.
This is another interesting one. This is another one that I think falls into that how much do you believe from round one pattern? Because if the Warriors follow the blueprint that they established in the first 20 minutes against the Sharks, then I give them a very big chance of troubling the Storm at the very least. You know, if Egan's out poking his nose out of dummy half and creating Fanua Blake and Barnett and Harris are linking together and managing to get one-on-one matchups with some of those Storm middles, I think that could be a real area of joy for them, but they have to, it can't just be for 20 minutes, you know, like 20 minutes wasn't getting enough against the Sharks. It certainly won't be enough against the Storm team that showed so much commitment and toughness last week. But if the Warriors can do that, if they can stay on the job through the 80 minutes with their intensity and their physicality and their direction, I think they're a chance of knocking the Storm off. I do. As impressive as the Storm were last week. Yeah.
All right. I got it in front of me. Would you like to guess the last time the Warriors won at all against the Storm and the last time they won in Melbourne?
I'll go the last time they won was the Nathan Friend backflip game in 2015.
It was.
Oh, that's good. And then was the last time they won in Melbourne, 2013?
It was 14.
Ah, bugger. I know they won one of the Anzac Day games there,
A 16-10 win on Anzac Day 2014. I'll give you $100 if you name the Warriors centre pairing that night.
Oh, so 2014.
Yep, you got 10 seconds.
Nemanja Lamape and Conrad Harrell.
Oh, my God, I nearly had to give you $100.
Well, who was it?
Well, Corin Harrell was on the bench. Ngati Lamape did start. Fuck. The other center, a late change in jersey 14, Ben Henry.
Oh, God damn it.
My God, that was so close. Jesus Christ. Look at you. Your ball knowledge is unbelievable, mate.
Right, I'm feeling it, man. I'm back.
I'm sad again. You know who was in the Storm team that night in 2015, the last time the Warriors did beat the Storm on the wing? Richie Kenner. Now I'm just thinking about last night again. Dear, oh dear.
Victoria's own Richie Kinnear.
They're no shot in this game. Storm are going to smash them.
You really? No shot?
They lost the last 15 in a row. They're not winning this game.
Yes, but this is not that team.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like this particular team has lost.
I mean, they lost the last two in a row last year. So there is that. Like, I just can't see it, mate. This is like, that would have to be the longest winning streak a single team has over another team in the NRL, right? It would have to be. Right, active, I mean.
Possibly. I don't know that off the dome.
Because, like, even South won occasionally against Melbourne when it wasn't in Melbourne. But, like, 15 in a row.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
I can't be asked finding that out. Someone,
you know, the Warriors always playing close.
I always have a fondness because this is the first time we ever went. Well, you'd been before, but the first time I ever went to Molly Malone's was the night the Storm put 70 on them. Great night.
Poor old Chanel Harris Tevita.
Yeah.
Lost by 70 and had a ruptured testicle. We did have a great time. Imagine him getting home and his partner saying, "How was work, Chanel?" And he goes, "Not great."
We lost by 100 and my dick exploded.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm back in the Storm.
No shot at all.
All right, maybe I'm being a bit harsh. I think the Storm will win comfortably.
Really? Oh, see, even if they win, I don't know if they've got it to do it comfortably. I think the Warriors, a bit like the Knights, will get a rocket from their performance last week. I think they're a lot better than what they showed. And
I think the Warriors are a really good team, but I think
you tipped them to finish 14th.
That was Well, I mean, they finished round. They were in 14th on the live ladder after they lost last week. So I didn't hear a lot from the peanut gallery after that one, did I? But yeah, I think the Storm take care of business. And when I say comfortable, I don't necessarily mean they're going to win by 40. I just mean it's kind of like it might almost be a little bit like last week where they just like up like 8 or 14 for a long period and just keep them at arm's length. I think that also is a comfortable win in a lot of ways. So
yeah, well, yeah, like the thing with me with the Storm is, like, I don't think we have a great idea of what their attack is going to quite look like just because last week just didn't sort of lend itself to that. So I'm interested to sort of see, now that they've got a good run in them and all that sort of deal, how are they going to attack? What is going to be their focus? You know, like any team that's got Harry Grant and Ryan Pappenhausen, you would think can do quite well through the middle, but are they going to be able to get enough ruck speed to get that going against a Warriors middle that is probably a good bit stronger? I don't know. I'm intrigued to see if Xavier Coates can back up his effort from last week, particularly in yardage. I think that's something that could get this Storm team a dimension that they've sort of lacked. But I was tipping the Storm earlier in the week, but I think I've talked myself into it. Can I change? Can we change the graphic that we put on the socials the other day?
Well, I can't change it, but you can change your tip if you really want to.
I'm gonna do it. I think the streak is over. I think the Warriors win.
I like it. I like where your head's at. I mean, I don't agree with you, but you know, it's good to have dreams. Yeah. I would say this has to be the longest round one to round two turnaround in history as the team of the show, the Manly Warringah Sea Eagles, take on the Sydney Roosters at Brookvale on Sunday.
It's been too long since we've been able to see our beloved Manly Sea Eagles run around back home as well. You know, so many.
I can't
great
wait
memories.
To watch them push it up and Manly and whatever else they do. It's going to be great. It'll be very exciting. I think it's going to be a great game. I do too.
Same sort of deal. How much of what we saw in round one for these two teams was real to you?
We're about to find out. I think Manly might, it's not just because the wheel decided, I think they might be a better team than people give them credit for. A lot of that obviously hinges on how long Tom Dvojevic stays healthy for, but he's healthy right now, and he was fantastic last week, and their forward pack was really good last week. Cherry just continues to play amazing. Luke Brooks, they got enough out of him to win and be successful last week. And yeah, I think that they can take care of business in this one. I think that whilst the Roosters' strength is definitely that forward pack who played so well against Brisbane last week or 2 weeks ago now, Manly more than matched it with South, and I think they can match it there. And then out the back, I just think that the talent they've got in that back line can create points. Obviously, the Roosters are no slouch there. Their back line's incredible. But I think that with that home crowd and with Daly Cher Evans playing as well as he is, and I'm still not really that enthralled with either of the Roosters halves, I think that that's a little bit of an advantage for them. For the Seagulls, I think they just got a bit more creativity about them. I think they might eke out a close win here.
So I'm favouring the Roosters because while I do agree with some of that stuff you said about Manly, I think there's a couple of very clear matchup advantages for the Roosters that they're gonna look at. Tommy Talau is coming on the wing for Jason Saab. I would imagine he'll actually go to the centres, and Ruben Garrick will
You'd think so. That
play
would make
on
sense.
The wing. But regardless, I think the Roosters will look at Tommy Talau wherever he's playing, and I think they'll look at former Rooster Jackson Bolo, and I think they'll try and really go after them both in a pretty serious way. And I can accept that there's still a lot of doubts about the creativity of the Roosters' halves, but I think when you've got that 2-5, when your back line is Tupou, Suoli'i, Manu, Young, you don't have to create that much for them. You know, they're kind of guys who can take a quarter of a chance and turn it into a try, let alone a half chance. And I think the Roosters are going to be stronger in the middle of the field, but that is predicated on what we saw from Victor Radley last week being something that he can replicate over and over and over again. I think he can. He's a player that I've probably had a lot more time for than others, even as the suspensions sort of knocked him around for a good couple of years there. But I think the way he finished last season, I thought the Roosters game in the final, the Roosters game, the Sharks and Storm games in the finals were two of the best games he's ever played. And then that performance against Brisbane in Las Vegas was right up there as well.
He was great.
If he's found that happy medium, I think that radically changes what this Roosters team is capable of in the middle of the field. And again, even if you have creative doubts over the spine, if your forwards are on top and your backs are crazy, all the halves have got to do is just give it to them. You know, like you don't have to create really great patterns to unleash someone like Joe Manu or Dom Young. You know,
that's
you
very
don't
true.
Have to, you don't have to be scheming out of dummy half if it's Lindsay Collins thundering under the ball.
Their depth is a joke.
Yeah, I just think they've got a bit too much from 1 to 17. They're a bit too consistent through that side for Manly to quite handle, but I do think Manly give it a good go. And I would like to see them go to Olokowatu early and often again, like they did in Las Vegas, like engage the big fella as much as you can, get him working, get him the ball, get him involved as much as you can, and good things will happen off the back of that.
Mm. Yeah, their depth is a joke. Like guys like Connor Watson, Egan Butcher, Angus Crichton, can't even crack 17. And that's just Spencer Lenu suspended as well. Ridiculous. Ridiculous squad they've got this year.
Shouldn't be allowed.
Dear. Shouldn't.
I'm going to call the ombudsman. For all of them.
I'm going to call the NRL ombudsman. Yeah, last game of the round. Is he still
taking your calls?
He's blocked my number, I think. Too many complaints about the Roosters. The last game around, Dolphins, Dragons. Again, how much in what we saw?
Yeah, see, I know this is going to be a popular Coltrane one. I know people are looking at it and thinking, I'll get the Dragons out of the way and I'll get an away tip. But I don't know how much of that was really real. You know, I thought they did well, definitely. I don't want to take anything away from the performance. And there was some great stuff to see from guys like Lomax and Sooley and Burden, even Flanagan and all that. But the Titans were very, very poor. The Titans had a lot of footy on the Dragons line through that first half. And while the Dragons defended well, I didn't think the Titans threw that much at them. And as disappointing as the Dolphins were in their season opener, they've made a couple of changes that I think most people
are
liking. Averillo in at center and New out is a good move. I like Katoa in. I'm surprised that they've dropped O'Sullivan.
Me too. Certainly. I thought it would be Cody dropping out.
But I think it's a more dangerous looking spine, definitely. And I don't hate Max Plath starting at lock either. I think that's a good move for them. I think part of the problem they had last week was a bit of an inability to get the ball across the field, and having a genuine passer or someone with a lot of experience passing at 13 should make that easier. So I'm not saying that the Finns are going to romp this in or anything like that, but I think that some of the vulnerabilities that they had against the Cows are not as visible this time around.
Yep, I agree. The changes, I think, are fantastic. They had to be done. I'm really excited to see Averillo rip in. He's a guy I've always had a lot of time for. We were both pretty shocked that the Dogs let him go.
And the Georgia's Hall Jet.
Indeed. And Katoa, it should be playing. It's that simple. I know that he kind of heated off a little bit at the end of last year, but I think his rookie campaign was very impressive for a guy that's still soaking, still only 19, right? And yeah, I think that if you're building the future of your club around a guy, which they clearly are with him, he's got to be playing. And he's got to be playing when you're a team like the Dolphins, because no disrespect to those guys, it's not exactly like the guys that were playing ahead of him last week are, you know, world beaters in any respect. So I think he's got to be there. As long as he's playing serviceable rugby league, he needs to be starting in the halves every single week. So I'm glad that he's back.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, I think it took us all by surprise that Katoa and Averillo were out last weekend, that New and Nikarima were in. But then I was kind of equally surprised that it's only one game and Bennett would cut bait on them. You know, you would think that if you're making a big call like that, you really believe in, and you really think that the two blokes you've chosen are the way to go, but then to just sort of throw it out again. So yeah, I'm really not sure. Maybe there's more to that than we know, or more than meets the eye. I really like the Dragons bench.
Mm.
Like, they've got Connor Mulhazen, who'll only get probably a few minutes at dummy half, relieving Little. But then Mick Molo, who's really solid. Fatala Mariner, who was great last week. And then Luciano Leilua, who I know is not a favorite of yours. But at the very least, I think you can accept that him coming off the bench.
Good bench. Good impact player.
And providing some impact and some offloads and some passing and a little bit of power running. At the very least, that's a task that he's well suited to. And then you look at that Dragons bench. It's Josh Kerr, Kenny Bromwich, Mark Nichols, Jared Wallace. Apart from Kerr, they're all pretty old. Apart from Wallace, they're not exactly the most skillful players either. And I wouldn't say any of those four are what you'd call explosive either. So maybe this is the sort of thing where the Dragons sort of take a little bit control once the Sting goes out of the game. I'm taking the Dragons, but I didn't have enough confidence or enough chutzpah to Coltrane them.
Taking the Dragons?
I'm tipping them, yeah.
The graphic, you're making a mockery of the graphic. You tip the Dolphins.
Well, you asked me to do my tips on like Wednesday, man. Things change.
Oh, okay.
Life changes.
Yeah. What changed in this game between yesterday when you gave me the tips and now?
I looked at the teams more closely. I thought about it.
Dude. Oh, you got your magnifying glass out and zoomed in.
I sure did. Okay. I sure did. It took me a long time to figure out which end I was meant to look through because I was looking through the end that made my eye look really big. Yeah. But I worked that out. It was a trying couple of hours, but I
will institute a rule. As long as you send me a photo of you physically looking at the teams in a newspaper and using a magnifying glass, you are allowed to change your tips.
Can I wear a pork pie hat with a press?
I would assume that it's implied that you would be. So,
all right. Well, you know, to keep the integrity the integrity of the tipping graphic alive, I will stick with the Dolphins.
Because it doesn't have any already because you tipped you changed your Storm one to the Warriors.
One change per week is permitted.
Okay. All right. All right.
What do you reckon? Who are you tipping?
Oh, forget about it. I'll tip the Dragons. They'll win.
Simi Renrandra trying the chip and chase. Oh, no, it's Simi Redradra. Redradra's away. Simi Redradra.
Oh, this will be interesting.
Oh, yes, it will, yes.
Simi Rundrundra.
Oh, he's absolutely buried it. Rundrundra.
Nick, if I told you that a man that used to talk to his own legs and eat entire blocks of cheese before games would appear on the list of Australia's 250 richest people, what would you say?
I'd say that guy sounds like a disruptor.
Well, Adam McDougall has disrupted the meal replacement shake industry.
This is unbelievable. So
incredible shit.
So the Australian has put out a list of the 250 richest Australians, which, like, you know, I'm not reading that. Why would you ever? But then I saw someone did a story saying that former Newcastle legend Adam Mad Dog McDougall has made it in there. And it's true. He is the 227th richest Australian. With an estimated net worth of $635 million because of the man shake. Private equity partners made a $400 million investment in McDougall's business Cranky Health in 2022. And now Mad Dog, who used to talk to his legs before games, is worth $635 million. Half a billy. Half a fucking billy for the Mad Dog. How good is that?
You know what has to happen next, right?
By the Knights.
By the Knights.
By the Knights.
Got to do it. What a story that would be.
Got to do it, man.
I mean, and that net worth, I mean, that would put him above basically every other, like, that's Russell Crowe, Nick Politis, stratosphere levels. Like, that's proper, proper rich.
Mate, I don't think Politis is on this list.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no, okay. He is. He is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I thought maybe he would be, but anyway. But yeah, incredible. Yeah,
he's number 60. His estimated net worth is $2.5 billion.
Yeah.
So right. Yeah, okay. I understandable. I got a little bit excited there, but okay. Who wouldn't? When the
we're
Mad
coming
Dog
for
is
you,
now,
Politis. We're coming
but,
for you.
But now the Mad Dog, he's a
cars are a depreciating asset. Meal replacement shakes can only go up in value.
Man, I'm telling you, man, the Mad Dog. He's a captain of industry, a city father, a blue blood dog. This is one of us making it. This is one for the people.
Oh, the Manshake's got a vegan range. Mad Dog.
Yeah, brother. You don't get half a billy without catering to the vegans.
That's true. It's especially like the people that just do it for health reasons as well. So maybe I'll get some. Support the Mad Dog. Get him up there, get him over Politis. If we stop everyone buying Fords and tell them to buy Manshakes instead, we could do this.
If we support this humble millionaire against this decadent billionaire,
exactly,
maybe he'll let Boom Rookies wet our beaks a little bit.
So my previous goal in this podcast was to get Corey Allen into the Origin team. I achieved that goal. My new goal is to get Adam McDougall above Nick Politis on the list of richest Australians.
Adam McDougall become a patron.
Imagine if he joined who's in the lowest tier. It's like,
oh, brother, you don't get $635 million without pinching a few pennies here and there.
Oh, I'm really happy we talked about this. What a great story. The Mad Dog.
Fantastic stuff.
Maybe he could pay back some of the money he stole from Souths. Nah, he ripped in. He played really well for Souths. It was just people didn't like him because he went back to the Knights, but like there was a period it was really bad. It was peak, like, throw it to the good kid areas when Adam McDougall was playing fullback for Souths in like 2000.
Brother, the McDougall family gave great service.
Hey, I would die for Luke McDougall.
You talk about an NRL grid king.
Oh my God! Some of the tries. I'll never stop believing in the Mad Pup. He was a goer. He had that dog.
You know, he got Tommy John surgery. He's the first NRL player to get it.
Did he? When was that?
Oh, I want to say, I'm pretty sure it's what finished him at Souths.
Mm.
And he spent a good time out of it. And it was he hurt his elbow somehow. And it was a big story at the time that he was going over to the US to get Tommy John.
Yeah, right.
Crazy, and,
yeah, and their father, Gilbert McDougall, played against Poppy Bungard.
There you go. Great there stuff. You've got to love it.
I'll get him a manshake for his birthday. He'll enjoy that. All right. Which one jumped over the fence to avoid a drug test? Was that Ben McDougall?
Yes, it was.
I don't want to defame anyone, but that was very funny.
Well, dude, Ben McDougall, who made a comeback years later, had a good year for the Storm, then went and played rugby in Europe, ended up playing for Scotland.
Love that. Love all of that.
The family of achievers, the McDougalls. Fair dinkum.
Yeah. Let's get him on the show.
If anyone McDougall or McDougall adjacent is listening, you have a standing invitation.
Anytime you want, you give us the call. Less fun news. Spencer Lenu, 8-week ban. Fine with it. What do you think?
I probably would have gone a bit heavier. I probably would have gone the 10 weeks. I thought some of the comments that he made at the judiciary hearing reflected pretty poorly on him. But I would hope that this is something that sort of changes his outlook on language like that, because it is just totally unacceptable. And that's the reason I wanted the heavier the suspension. I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about sort of, you know, education and rehabilitation, but I think sometimes punishment is required. And I think this was something that required a punishment.
Yep. Absolutely agree. I honestly did feel a little bit lenient looking at it, but yeah, again, we had the tiresome arguments of people saying it wasn't a big deal, or saying, oh, this high tackle only got 3 weeks and he broke someone's jaw, the stuff. I think that this stuff is obviously more culturally impactful and more impactful on impressionable young people in our society than, you know, someone getting hit in the head by a bad tackle. And if you don't understand that, you're an idiot. So, yeah, maybe think about that, you dummy. You got any other news? Want to get out of here?
No, I think that's about it. I'm going to go and beg Adam McDougall for money.
Oh, well, that seems like a good use of your time. But before you do that, could you stick around for 2 more minutes while I give a quick shout out to people in the top 2 tiers on our Patreon subscription service? If you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/NRLBoomRookies. You get access to our Discord server, an extra show every week, merchandise discounts. You could still play the Culture and Cup if you wanted to. But if you want to, you could start. You could tip one of this weekend's games. But
this is the last week that you can get in. Like, someone won it going 2-1 a couple of years ago.
1-2
in the first 3 weeks. But there's a reason that was sort of out of the ordinary. Got to jump in. Got to get going.
Mm. All right. So thank you to a perverted female listener. What's up? Chris Abnell, Dave, Michael Fucker Murray, Stu, Wick Gutted Wayno, Adam Small, Broncos legend Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Pond, Butty, Chewbacca Snuffleupagus, Dan Carlin, David, an anonymous backer, Dragons tied to change with Falligan Pep. He said Falligan. I did not mispronounce that. It says Falligan. Am I missing something? I don't know.
Say it again.
It says Dragons tied to change with Falligan Pep. So Falagan. Has he just spelled Flanagan wrong, or am I missing a joke?
Well, look, if it's a bit too highbrow for you, then I don't have to explain it.
Ashley, please message us and explain it to us, because maybe we're idiots. Ed Burton, future Clive Churchill medalist, Keon Kolomatungi. You might need to change that one soon, Frankie. I hear your mum's going out with Squeak. Jason, Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, Josh, Brandon. Kenaz makes your job. Scoring tries. Easy. Kevin Campion versus Shane Webke. Kicks South out of the comp. Not a bad suggestion at this point. Lachlan Hancock, Luke Charles, Speedmore, Mads, Taylor's version. Manly are no longer the team of the pod. Matthew Duggan, Morgan Watkins. My name is Nick Campton, and rugby union is my favorite type of rugby. My ding ding dog is hard and I'm sad. Never trendy. Nick Kotrick lives on my street, subliminally coaching him to run it straight. Sami Army, Paul Mac 78, Reese Brown, Rodrigo Rodrado did have a beard. Roxanne Clark, see you in Vegas, shipping up to Bostock. Shunter, stupid white bastard. Tanking a Coltrane Cup with cowardly picks is the finest thing a person can do. In fact, that's Fred Astaire stuff. The black vegetable, the boomiest of rookies, the silver bullet in Resch's corner. Thor, Tom Hardy, Woz, and Westlife Podcast, West Tigers are back, baby. Thank you so much for your support to everyone in the lower tiers and to everyone who just listens. Thank you as well.
Go on to Resch's corner tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
What is that?
It's a certain part of Toongabby Sports Club that has been reclaimed by the people.
Ah, why are you going to Toongabby?
To go to Resch's corner.
Oh, okay. Thought maybe you had like something on. But
yeah. Resch's Corner is there. That's why I'm going there.
I assumed you had a different reason beyond going to a pub to drink Resch's, but maybe not. Maybe I'm an idiot.
No. You can drink Resch's anywhere, but only one pub has Resch's Corner.
Is this a real thing or did you invent this?
Well, everything's invented, isn't it?
No.
That's how it becomes real.
The sun wasn't invented.
Yeah, and the good Lord upstairs invented that, didn't he?
This is somehow a worse experience than watching South last night.
Have a rest, son. You'll feel better.
I've got some work to do. I've got to edit the show, post, do some stuff, clean the house. But that Guinness at about 4:30 cannot come soon enough.
Terrific.
And wherever you're listening, I hope you enjoy a fine Guinness or whatever tipple of your choosing makes you happy. And I hope you have a great weekend. And I hope your team wins, unless you go for the Roosters or the Bulldogs. Say goodbye, Campbell.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
That's goodbye from me.